It's The Takeaway, and I'm Duarte Geraldino. We move now to the latest in our series this week called Taking Pains with Women's Health. Today, we look at health disparities for women of color. Dr. Aletha Maybank spends a lot of time thinking about this. She is Deputy Commissioner and Founding Director of the Center for Health Equity at the New York City Health Department. She's here to talk about why the disparities persist and where we can make meaningful change. Welcome, Dr. Maybank.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
So first, give us the lay of the land, if you would. How big is the gap for women of color when it comes to getting health care and staying healthy in America?
Well, as a woman and as a Black woman, before I go into the statistics, I think it's very important that I honor the dignity of women. What I'm very clear of is that sometimes rattling off the numbers without acknowledgement of a personal or emotional burden can be hard for people to listen to the stats. And while epidemiology is crucial to understanding the health of people, we always know that we are more than the sum of our statistics. And we have many strengths, we're resilient, we've survived, and we've thrived to this point. And we have vibrant stories of hope and triumph. But what we're very aware of is that Black women within this country are more likely to die early, prematurely, less than 65 years of age, than women of other racial and ethnic backgrounds. We're more likely to suffer from chronic disease, such as diabetes and obesity and hypertension. And among women, we have the highest death rates from breast cancer and other forms of cancer. And if we look at reproductive justice angle and our reproductive health, we're less likely to really feel powerful in our choices that we can really make for our bodies as it relates whether to having babies or not, or even being able to just raise our babies in safe and healthy environments. And we know that our babies are actually 2 to 3 times more likely to die before reaching the first year of age.
2 to 3 times more likely to die before reaching the first year of age. Let's talk about why. How much of this can be attributed to access to care versus bias at the doctor's office and medical schools and in other areas?
Access to health care is absolutely important. Access that's timely, respectful, of great quality is absolutely essential. And yes, there is plenty of evidence that indicates that healthcare professionals exhibit the same levels of what we call implicit bias or unconscious bias as the wider population. And so this is noticed even as young as medical students. And it really shouldn't be a surprise because many students and all of us are very normalized to the whiteness of our society. And so while race is a social construct of which there is absolutely no biological basis, we know that, as I said, many students have these similar false beliefs about the biological differences of people by race. And we're hearing things such as, you know, Black people don't feel pain as much as whites. We have stats that show that Black people aren't given pain medicine in the same way that whites have been given pain medicine. You know, and that's what white supremacy and slavery really has done to the people. And it's translated across all of our systems. And it has consequences. It has consequences even within our healthcare system. And so no matter how well-intended you may be as a physician, those biases absolutely have impact on the care of a patient, but also has impact on exacerbating the health inequities that exist.
So Dr. Maybank, in a recent NPR survey, 21% of Black women said they were so concerned about being discriminated against that they didn't seek medical attention at all. How does that impact their ultimate health outcome, being so afraid that if you see a doctor, he'll discriminate against you?
It creates a lot of mistrust, right? It creates mistrust in the way that women feel that they're able to engage with their physicians, and do they trust what they're telling them? Do they trust to follow up and to take certain medications or treatment regimens? All of this has tremendous impact, not only about the women themselves, and many women are caretakers of families, so it actually can impact families also.
I want to point you to, for a second, the American Cancer Society's recent recommendations about breast cancer screening. Many medical professionals say it doesn't actually serve women of color. How is that even possible?
Well, part of the challenge with that has to do with Black women actually, what we're finding, are getting cancer earlier. And they're also getting more aggressive types of cancer. They're calling it triple negative cancers. And so they're also dying earlier. And so it's really is this recommendation that's been put out there from 40 to 45 years. Is that really working for Black women? And the reasons behind why they're getting more aggressive cancers are not fully clear at this present time. But I think, again, it speaks to these broader issues around, you know, what impacts health. And if what's really striking about what I mentioned earlier about the maternal mortality is that Black women with a college degree or higher, because there are a lot of assumptions that if you have higher income or higher education, you totally escape, you know, the impacts of, you know, disparities and discrimination and racism. But if you're a Black woman with a college degree or higher, you actually have still have higher rates of complication at pregnancy than a white woman, an Asian woman, or a Latina woman with less than a high school degree in New York City.
So as we're tying up, what would you say to women who are worried about facing discrimination at the doctor? How do you empower these women of color?
Well, there are several things that need to happen. I think, you know, as the institution, we have to take responsibility. And I think that is an important demand from women, that we need to own up and be accountable for the racism that we have perpetuated over the years. And it's fine to speak up and to advocate and to say if you're not being treated right or being treated fairly. It's absolutely essential for the institutions to go through processes that help them become an anti-racist, multicultural organization. And some institutions, such as ourselves at the New York City Department of Health, are really stepping up to that call and naming racism, because if you don't name it, you absolutely can't change it. And what's really powerful at this point in time, we're in a time where many movements are happening. And Black women have been advocates and have led movements all across the years. We look at the anti-lynching movement, you know, of the early 1920s, led by Ida B. Wells to fight for the dignity of women. We look at now and we look at Black Lives Matter. We look at Me Too, the Women's March, all led by women of color. All of these will help and improve the health of Black women across this country.
Thank you very much, Dr. Aletha Maybank, Deputy Commissioner and Founding Director of the Center for Health Equity in New York City's Health Department. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Remember, you can find every segment of our series so far at thetakeaway.org/womenspain. What questions do you have about maternal and reproductive health in the U.S. today? And how could it be improved? We'll put some of your queries to an expert tomorrow on the program. Call and leave a message at 877-8-MY-TAKE. And thanks to the many of you who called us with your stories.
This is Shayna calling from the Bay Area. Absolutely, in my case, age and skin color were at the intersection of a doctor's bias. When I was in college and I'd never engaged in sexual activity, I went to an on-campus doctor for some issues that happened with my reproductive system that included severe bleeding. The doctor informed me that my body had terminated a pregnancy naturally. I was super confused, and I once again launched into explaining to that doctor, hey, I'm not sexually active. Yeah, that's not the right explanation. He again explained to me about how my pregnancy had been self-aborted. I remember feeling belittled, offended, and being scared, just really worried that this condition that was obviously very serious was being left untreated to get worse. I know now that I cannot be silent when things like this happen.
Hi, this is Julie for the Bronx. Until I stepped in on my mother's care, she was being treated as if her pain was non-existent. And she was almost always given the least aggressive type of care until I stepped in with my research and spreadsheets and demanded the type of care that ultimately kept her alive for 4 more years. That's why we need to take control of our own health, because doctors definitely treat people of color differently.
My name is Susie Cullen. I live in Denver, New Jersey. A number of years ago, I went to the hospital with excruciating pain and was told by the triage nurse that I was just an addict, and I was made to wait 6 hours before I saw the doctors, who also thought I was an addict. In the end, I had sciatica, which necessitated surgery, so I'm very familiar with that issue.